Call to order for the Technical Advisory Committee. We do have a quorum today. So the next on the agenda is the meeting minutes from September 15, 2016. Are there any corrections, additions to those minutes?
Any questions to approve?
Do you have a second?
Yes, for a second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Next is the financial progress report. Curtis Baker.
All right. Thank you. Yes, so if you look at attachment 3A, what you'll see is to date, as of October 31st, which is when our last billing was completed, we have expended about 23% of our budget. We are right kind of on target. This is obviously still kind of early in the year for us as we are on the fiscal year, but everything is looking good and we are right where we need to be. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Hearing none, do I have a motion?
Anybody move to approve?
Second. Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Technical progress report. Again, Mr. Baker.
All right, thank you. So first of all, thanks everybody for coming. I feel like we have a pretty full house here for our last meeting of 2016. Really, and none of this is news to you since the last time we met. Obviously, we do now have a new president-elect.
Curtis Baker?
Yeah. Yeah. I should have run. I missed my opportunity. But I think we're very conscious now that we don't really know what's going to happen in the first 100 days. I think, you know, as many of you have probably read a lot or at least some about the $1 trillion of infrastructure, potential private investment. There's a lot of potential for some real positives. I know some communities might already be thinking about, are there shovel-ready projects in the pipeline if something like that does come about. With the Chow is the I can't remember her first name. This was appointed. I'm sorry,
Elaine
Chow. Yes, was appointed Transportation Secretary. She's definitely more, I think, from, you know, I think served under the Bush administration. So I would at least at this point sort of assume that the potential would be that if there was an influx of transportation funding, that it would use the same conduits as it has, as like the ARRA program did a few years ago. But again, that's just me, you know, guessing. I think we're kind of prepared for anything. As many of you know, we talked about that MPO reform idea that looked at combining MPOs and sharing plans and all this stuff. Speaking to some people, a lot of people think that is just DOA now because of the administration change. We're still kind of monitoring that a little bit. But I would say it's definitely an exciting time, and I think for potentially to see infrastructure and transportation be discussed at the national level is always usually a pretty good thing. We're looking forward to seeing where that discussion goes. But really don't have anything else other than you all will be receiving emails, if not today, in the next few days, about updating your membership list for 2017. We ask that you fill those out, I believe, by the beginning of February, just to give us an idea of who will represent your committee, if there are any changes. I know there have been some retirements, things like that. So, but with that, we look forward to our final meeting and then kicking into 2017. So, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Hearing none, we'll move on. The AMAT Federal Funds Report, David Poulet.
Okay, thank you, Amy. Since our last meeting in September, not a whole lot has happened with funding. We have had two projects that sold. One was the Hiram Trail extension in Hiram, and the other was the Freedom Secondary Trail Phase 3 in Akron. The Freedom Secondary Trail Phase 3 is kind of an exciting project because that'll be the final link in that trail that connects Akron with Kent. The next thing that I wanted to discussed was the new format for the funding balances table. Most of the time, you're probably used to seeing an 11 by 17 sheet in your packet. And what we decided to do was we decided to do actually one of those sheets for each funding type that we work with. One for STP, one for CMAC, and one for transportation alternatives. And the reason we decided to do that was each one of these funds are kind of managed separately. And when we had all of our projects lumped together in that one big spreadsheet, at the bottom, when you saw a balance or a deficit, you didn't know for sure which fund that was for. So now we can kind of track our funds separately and know exactly what type of balance we have for each fund type. And what I was going to try to show you up here we also changed something with the way that we calculate balances. And this is a spreadsheet that we get from ODOT. And it's very complicated to look at. I'm not even going to try to begin to explain all these numbers that's on there. But the one thing that I wanted to bring to your attention was traditionally we would take all of the balance in fiscal year 16 and transfer it to fiscal year 17. But in reality, ODOT, they kind of have a little different way of doing it. I know this is hard to see, but this actually is for the STP funding. And this actually shows that they're carrying balances from fiscal year 11 to 17, from fiscal year 12 to 17, 13, 14, 15, and 16. So they don't actually carry a lump sum from one year to the next. They actually kind of spread it out. And Chad, if there's anything you'd like to add or correct, that's feel free to.
It's one of the major efforts we go through every year, our finance department. So we look at old encumbrances that haven't been touched in a while, and then we close their encumbrances. So when you see FY11 to 17, FY12 to 17, those were encumbrances set up back then that we finally got to the point where we closed, and then they come back to Amex.
Right.
So that's a yearly process we go through.
Yeah. So anyhow, well, the bottom line is we're just trying to parallel our accounting as close to ODOT's as we can. So this is a work in progress, and we're still trying to kind of refine this so that it's a little more accurate and a little bit easier for you to understand. And I guess the only other thing I have is the funding policy subcommittee met. We met Wednesday, December 7th, yesterday. And we're still churning through our funding policy. And when we get through that, what we'll do is we'll have a presentation about some proposed changes that we'll present to the committees, which will probably be sometime in the spring. So that's all I have. If there's any questions. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Any old business?
Nope.
Having none, we'll move on to new business. First on the agenda is a regional public transit plan. Jeff Gardner will be presenting.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Attachment 5A in the mail out is the regional public transit plan. The public transit plan is developed as a component of the 2040 plan update process. The purpose of the public transit plan is to analyze the region's existing transit system and make recommendations that are eligible for inclusion in the upcoming 2040 regional transportation plan. The final 2040 plan approval will be requested in May of next year. The public transit plan presents a wide variety variety of data and discusses the current levels of ridership and coverage provided by the area's two public transit providers, Metro RTA and CARTA. Metro and CARTA both provide standard fixed route service to the general public, along with demand response service to the elderly and the disabled. Metro and CARTA both provide superior service to the general public as well as to the elderly and disabled compared to similar transit agencies across the country. The ridership and coverage analysis in the transit plan then leads to general recommendations, which we hope will improve existing service for those who already use public transportation in addition to attracting new passengers. Primarily, the AMAS transit plan underscores the importance of preserving the existing transit system through the maintenance of Metro and CARTA's bus fleets as well as their building infrastructure. The bulk of AMAT's attributable federal funds have always gone towards maintaining and preserving Metro and CARTA's bus fleets in a state of good repair. The AMAT's transit plan also recommends operational improvements, such as increased frequency on high ridership routes in order to satisfy demand as well as for traffic congestion management. Additional recommendations are also made for increased coordination between other agencies, including the social service agencies in the area that also provide transportation. The staff is requesting approval of the AMAS Regional Public Transit Plan. Are there any questions?
Hearing no questions, we do need a motion to approve the document.
Dave, I move to approve.
I have a second. Having a motion and a second, is there any discussion? Can I, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Jeff. Next is the draft congestion management process report. Amy Crater.
I'm still in mourning. I am here to present the congestion management process report. This is our draft report as of right now. There's been extensive changes since the last time we did this report, so we decided to bring it to you as a draft. The purpose is to monitor, evaluate, and alleviate congestion throughout our area. The procedures are to identify system components, or define system components, identify performance measures, evaluate level of service, both in the existing and the future for all modes of transportation, identify and evaluate CMP alternatives, and then recommend improvements for roadways and transit systems, as well as system-wide improvements. Some of the CMP components, the first component is roadways. This includes all the freeways, principal arterials. We also include any roadways that we think have the potential to have congestion problems. We also include any roadways that basically continue the network. We don't try to have any stubs sticking out anywhere, things like that. So our network consists of 135 miles of freeway, which is all the freeways, and 375 miles of arterials. We also include intersections. Currently, we have 34 intersections on our congestion management system. These intersections are specifically selected that we think they have the potential for congestion. We don't analyze them unless we think there's a chance that they're congested. This is our congestion management network. These are also new reports. For performance measures, one of our performance measures is volume to capacity ratio. One is density, which is similar to volume to capacity ratio. We also have transit load service, which takes into account headways, vehicle hours traveled, and vehicle miles traveled. Traffic congestion was analyzed on the freeway for future and existing, also on the arterials for future and existing. Intersections just for existing, transit congestion existing, freight congestion existing, our freeway level of service analysis. We used a capacity manual 2010, and we used a peak hour analysis to determine density. Our existing congestion results, there were 206 segments, and 42 of those segments were considered congested in existing. There were 196 segments in the future. Some of the segments were adjusted in the future, and 78 of those were congested. We also did a leave analysis, which takes into account closest banks, ramps, interchanges. 9 of the 20 leave sections were considered congested in the existing. 5 were considered congested in the future. Please note that there were 7 leaving segments that were not evaluated in the future due to current projects and extensive ramp modifications. We also did an arterial level of service analysis. Our methodology for this, we took the ODOT capacity calculator and compared it against our peak hour traffic volumes to get a volume to capacity ratio. In existing, we had 35 of the 597 segments congested. In the future, 138 of the 596 segments were congested. In intersections, we use the planning level, highway capacity manual 2010, and 34 of the 34 intersections were considered congested. Please note these were specifically selected, so this number would be a high percentage. For transit level of service analysis, it's based on headway. Basically, A is passengers don't need a schedule, the headways are at least every 10 minutes, and all the way down to failing, which is the service is really unattractive, there's less than one vehicle per hour. Here's some of our transit buses. I'm going to showcase them with you. The part of results for level of service are on table 4-1 of your report, and the metro results are on table 4-2 of your report. And as I said, these are not based on the usage of the bus specifically or the capacity of the buses. It's literally just the headways. We also did a freight analysis. Most of the freight movement by trucks is on freeways and major state routes, so improving these roadways would improve truck freight movement. Rail movement is generally not impacted directly by roadway congestion. However, removal of at-grade intersections could improve safety as well as possibly increase railroad speeds. This is our system-wide congestion. We did we used a comparison for arterials and freeways in 2010, which was our previous existing study, 2015, which is our current existing study, and 2040, which is our future congestion study. As you can see, for the most part, our levels of service improved between 2010 and 2015. However, they do increase back up by 2040. Incident-related congestion. We took the high crashes and overlaid them on our congestion map, and the results of where they concur are on map 7-2. We selected these locations because they are both a safety and a congestion issue, so they are that much more of a congestion issue. Some of our CMP strategies are listed on table 8-1 and 8-2. These include operational and capacity improvements, as well as things such as ITS, bike and ped facilities, transit, and demand management, which is like alternative work schedules and things like that. The strategies were evaluated for their effectiveness and feasibility, and anything that was considered ineffective or infeasible was removed from further recommendation. These are listed on in Appendix H, all the way at the very back of your report. Our CMP recommendations, most congested locations were given a recommendation, and all the recommendations are located in Chapter 9 of your report. A few congested locations were minimally congested. Either they had a decreasing congestion or traffic volume, lack of political, financial, or geographical feasibility, or the project has not been analyzed since, or the segment has not been analyzed since a project nearby has been completed. So we just don't have the data to analyze it. There were 33 roadway recommendations, 9 freeway recommendations, and 24 arterial and intersection recommendations. And they are located on map 9-1 in your report, table 1, 9-1, and 9-2. There are also various transit, freight, and supplemental strategies also recommended in chapter 9 of your report. I'm not going to go through all of them for you. And this is a map of all of our congestion recommendations and their locations. The number on this map corresponds with table 9-1 and 9-2 in your report. They are not in any particular order. They're just, they're not worst to best or anything like that. So, next steps. The draft CMP will be reviewed and updated with any comments that you may have. Final CMP will be presented in January of 2017 for your approval. Recommendations from the CMP and other needs reports will be reviewed for the 2040 Regional Transportation Plan. And plan recommendations will be prioritized by need and financial constraint for forecast by forecasted future availability of funding. Any questions? Sorry, I tried to go quick.
Thank you, Amy. I would suggest everybody look at it with their community and get back to Amy with any comments.
If anybody has any comments or questions, please contact me.
Yeah, and if I could just add that this is really the last analysis that we're doing until before we start actually putting recommendations in the plan. This is kind of that final piece of analysis that we need. So we'll actually be contacting you even maybe before this is approved to say, hey, is this a project you would like to see? Is this something that should be in the plan? Is it something you expect to pursue, et cetera? So this is sort of that last step before we really start building the long-range plan, which is due in May.
Next item on the agenda is the 2013 to 2015 traffic crash report update. David Collette.
Thank you. Just in case you've been laying awake at night wondering where is the 13-15 crash report, I'm going to try to bring you up to date on what's happening with it. The biggest reason that we don't have it done yet is we changed our core methodology, the way we obtain data and analyze it. We changed it from downloading text data to using GIS data and then using our GIS program to try to analyze it. Now, before, what we would do is we would download data that was, this data was derived from the actual police officer's report, and locations were actually written out. They were actually, it actually said West Market and Main Street. And it wasn't quite as simple as it sounds, because we had to do a lot of rationalization, and we had to make sure we had like proper names and everything. But then what we did is we just kind of, in a big spreadsheet, we sorted it and we separated it into intersection and non-intersection, and we just kind of summed up how many crashes happened at an intersection or in a crash segment. Using the new method, what we do is we download the data from the Ohio Department of Transportation, which gives it from, they download it from the Ohio Department of Public Safety, and then they kind of manipulate it, and then they plot it. And they have this wonderful tool, the safety tool called GCAT. It stands for GIS Crash Analysis Tool. And all the crashes in the whole state are plotted by coordinates. And there's a lot of benefits to doing it this way, but we had to develop a system where we came up with an actual list of crashes like we did when we did it the other way. This is what the city of Kent looks like when you download the data from GCAT. I just picked Kent because it was easy to fit on a picture. But as you can see, those are all crashes, 13 to 15 crashes, and each color stands for the severity of the crash. And it's nice to look at, and you can maybe see some corridors, but you just really can't look at that and know which area is the worst. So what we had to do was we had to go, and behind all these plotted points, there's also a table. So we had to use the table some also. But what we had to do, the challenge was, is to go from this and somehow download this data and somehow come up with our list of locations. So what we decided to do, our GIS specialist, Seth, of course, was very, very helpful with this. What he decided to do was we were going to draw a 250-foot radius around every intersection. And that is the same radius that ODOT uses for an intersection crash. And then we would also go 50 feet on each side of a road to capture segment crashes. And we did this for all classified roadways, and also other roadways that we knew had safety problems. So in non-urban areas, it was pretty simple. And actually, when you see these pictures, each one of these little green dots is a crash. So that's what the little green dots are. But here's our 250-foot radius around intersections, and then these are the segments. And it was, in some areas, it wasn't too bad. But then when we got into urban areas, it was a little more complicated. It was a tremendous amount of work to set this up, and we had some interns that did a little bit of it, so that also helped. But that was one of the challenges. We had several challenges. Once again, setting this thing up was probably one of the most time-consuming challenges. Then I began to notice that a lot of crashes are improperly plotted. I couldn't just take those crashes and assume everything was right. I had to kind of check the table that was behind them, and then actually looked at thousands of probably actual police reports to check them. So I don't know how exactly it happens. We had a lot of Cleveland crashes. We had a group of Cleveland crashes that were somehow mixed in, but. And we also had a lot of crashes by police stations, because what would happen is the police officer would come back after a shift, and he had a little GIS device. They have little GIS devices, and he'd be maybe sitting in his cruiser or inside the office, and he would press that button, and those are the coordinates that it would associate with that crash. So we had a lot of crashes by some police stations. Intersection and non-intersection crashes, getting these sorted out was a challenge. Interstate freeway interchanges were a challenge, and I'll get into that in a little bit. And then Crash's reference to an address were not in the buffer zone like we thought they would be. So here's an example of intersection and non-intersection crashes. These crashes that happened between the intersections, we were pretty confident. I was pretty confident those were segment crashes. But the challenge was the ones that happened in here, because just because a crash happened in that 250-foot radius didn't mean that it was necessarily an intersection crash. For example, crashes on the downstream of the intersection. A lot of those really weren't intersection crashes. And we had to look at a lot of police reports and data, and I'm still trying to come up with a really good way to separate those. But I feel very confident with how we separated those out. This is Maslin Road. This is in green, Maslin Road, I-77 interchange, and you have ramps. You have a lot of congestion. You have streets coming in, and this is just a big mess. And for some reason it's really hard. You'd almost have to look at every crash report, because a lot of them just say Maslin Road and I-77 or I-77 at Maslin Road. So you have to look at those carefully. And what we did for this crash report is, we just kind of looked at this interchange as a whole, and we might have like another ranking of just interchanges, and then maybe the worst ones we'll kind of try to dig into deeper and see exactly what's happening. But it was really hard to kind of separate those out into the proper locations. And this is an example of where a crash would be referenced to an address, but for some reason it would be plotted back here. Like, this happened a lot in commercial areas, Montrose, and places where there might be a plaza back here. And I know what you're thinking. You're probably thinking, well, those happened in the parking lot. No, they didn't. They happened, actually, this is down on Waterloo Road. And actually, I looked at each and every case report, and they actually happened up here, but for some reason, they got plotted right over the building of the address. So that was a challenge also. And that was quite a few crashes in some areas. So those are the things that kind of delayed the crash report. And some other things that didn't change is we still deleted animal and construction zone crashes. We didn't actually analyze the freeways themselves. We looked at interchanges and crashes with ramps and the intersecting road, but we didn't actually analyze the actual freeways. We still have to have a high crash to be considered a high crash location. It still has to have 10 crashes, a crash rate of 1, and we'll still rank them like we always did. So that's why it's delayed, and I'm really hoping that I'll have this done. Actually, I'm getting close to having it done now, and I'm planning to present the actual report at the next meeting in January. So if there's any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
Yeah, one of the things that we've talked about internally is just, I think, you know, we've always heard from our members in the past that our safety reports have been very helpful in terms of identifying intersections and identifying arterials, really to chase after HSP funds and really identify those. I think what we want to do is say, like, you know, it's getting, in a weird way, it's like we've got better data, but it's getting more complicated. And I know a lot of people do, when they're looking at specific intersections and consultants, and you're pulling up the data and it's finding out which ones are really there. So, you know, we're putting this work in on the front end, and I hope it's still considered of high value to our members, because it does take a lot of work. I think we've all felt like we still want to have those identified locations versus just saying, you know, here's the data. So I guess in some ways with Dave's explanation, I'm also hoping that this has validated the work that he's doing because it is, you know, Dave's going to turn into Howard Hughes in his office going crazy with weird ticks and as he chases down every last crash. But yeah, it is complicated.
Dave really pointed out some of the challenges of really looking at crash data because reporting is not necessarily consistent.
Right.
More often than not, you have to drill down and sometimes just go back to where everyone reports it.
And we're really trying to find that right level of, okay, when do you just say, okay, we're done? You know, if you guys dig deeper, maybe you will find three or four crashes that, you know, weren't plotted correctly, but we want it to be of a high enough quality that it's better than just you going to the TIM system or something and pulling up the crashes. So that's really our goal with this. And I think, Dave, from our understanding, our limited understanding of GIS, each year we do it, it should get a little easier. We'll know what to look for. And we built the system now, at least, which took some time, but it should at least go quicker in the future as well.
Yeah, there was two things that I'd also like to mention. First of all, we have lost a couple staff members, so now we're all doing a little bit more, so that delayed it a little bit. And also,
did you wear them out on the crash studies?
What's that?
You wore some of the people on the crash studies?
Yeah, they always leave when I give them that interview. And we also analyzed 4 years of data because I started with 12, and 12 through 15, so that I could kind of compare with the previous report. So, you know, from this point forward, we should just have 1 year of data to really have to analyze. I mean, to actually add. I mean, we'll just be adding 1 year at a time from this point forward. That shouldn't take near as long. Plus, for now, we have some of the bugs worked out, and that should also streamline.
And all of our federal requirements now are looking at crashes on a 5-year period versus a 3. So, for our reporting, we need to have every year so we can, you know, show our performance measures over a rolling 5-year average. So,
I will say that these reports, the congestion and the crash, are really invaluable to us. We use them not only for, obviously, the funding opportunities that are there, not only to this body but other organizations where we might get money from, but also just as a tool for us locals. Many, many times we use this and understand that a fix could be as simple as some additional signage or paint on the ground or tweaking some timing in the signal, or it could be a big major geometric change that requires millions of dollars. I really appreciate the effort by staff and look forward to future reports.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Dave, who's responsible, like some of the anomalies you found for like the police officers, do you report that back then to like the highway, you said you got this from the highway safety program, is there some report back so maybe in future years they can say, hey, village of whatever, or city of whatever, your officers are doing this and it's, you know, can we fix it so that you get good data in the future?
Yeah, I would actually, I haven't had a lot of time to really do that so far, but I would really like to try to communicate more with safety forces, with police officers, and I don't think they really realize how important their data is. I think that they, first of all, I don't think they, you know, the crash report they have to fill out is very long, tedious to fill out, and I don't think they like doing them, and I don't think they realize how important it is. I think they have this impression that they do this because the insurance companies want to see it, or I don't think they even realize how many different types of people from different disciplines actually look
right.
At
and
these
I,
things.
Right, and I don't know the chain of command for going down there, but if you infect the highway safe, you know, and they basically got out the officers as opposed to saying writing something to each community where you see a heavy highlight, I don't know what your best option there, but I think unless it gets back to them, they're not going to change.
Right, right, that's a good point.
Have you seen a lot of crashes on donut shops?
Oh, come on, Dave. Come on.
Any other questions for David? Thank you. Next order of business is resolutions. We have resolution 2016 2015-14. It's approving amendment number 9 to the Transportation Improvement Program fiscal year 2016 to 2019 to add 3 new projects, revise the funding to 2 projects, and revise the schedule for 1 project. I will need a motion after Mr. Pillay presents.
Okay, thanks again. The three new projects we're adding is the South Main Street Corridor in Akron. This is actually the result of a substantial Tiger grant that the city received. And they'll be replacing sidewalks, the street and sidewalks, and adding green infrastructure. And construction is scheduled in 2018 using $5 million in discretionary funds. The next new project is Cleveland-Maslin Road, which is widening to 5 lanes between I-77 and State Route 18 in Fairlawn and Montrose. It's also going to include a roundabout. Engineering is scheduled in fiscal year 17 using $200,000 of recently acquired Highway Safety Improvement Program funds, and right away is scheduled in 19 using $120,000 of CMAC funds. And the other new project is in your city, Amy. It's State Route 91 and Darrell Road, the new interchange. Engineering is scheduled to begin in fiscal year 17 using $732,000 of recently acquired highway safety funds. Two projects that received revised funding is Howe Avenue, adding engineering or environmental right-of-way in fiscal year 18 and move $40,000 into that phase. And State Route 91 and Canton Road, State Route 91 Canton Road and East Market Street is we're going to add engineering in 17 and 18 with recently acquired highway safety funds. And the project that has a revised schedule is Streetsboro Signal. We're going to move that forward 1 year from fiscal year 2020 to fiscal year 2019. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
Seeing no questions, do I have a motion to approve?
True. Motion approved.
Do I have a second?
Casper, second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Under other business, first I'd like to congratulate Curtis Baker on his formal appointment. He's no longer our interim director. I think you all got the email on that, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Second, Tony Ranker from ODOT had a few things he wanted to share with us today, if he's ready to do that.
Thanks, Amy. Thanks, Chris. I apologize for not getting on the agenda before. We a little bit late on that, but what I wanted to talk about today was spend a few minutes. I was second of the MPOs. I cannot make this week's policy meeting, so either Steve Rebello or John Puri will be making the same presentation next week. But what do you have in front of you? We'll be coming around. There's a new procedure that we're instituting concerning noise walls in the district. Catching you up, this may not affect everybody in the room, but just to let you know, there are 3 noise wall programs. There's type 1, when ODOT builds a new road on a new alignment or widens a roadway, where we have to look at, for the environmental policies, we have to look at CCR for noise abatement that we have to do. Type 2 is our old retrofit program, which started by the General Assembly back in 1993. Noise walls you see around this area are often included in type 2 retrofit noise walls. Where the department went back in and actually tried to fix the problem that occurred earlier for houses or receptors that predated the building, the expansion of the interstate. Then there's a little known one, which is called type 3. Type 3 means that there is noise that is out there, but there is no funding source for us to be able to build it. So typically, type 3 is when the interstate was there and then the building developed next to it. And then either come to the state or to local community say, fix our problem. We'll go out there and say, hey, you have a problem. Well, we're not going to fix it. So what we're going to talk about is type 1 and type 2, excuse me, type 2 and type 3. And typically, what would happen in the past is somebody would call our office, we would get enough complaints, or maybe just one complaint. We would start an analysis with one of our consultants who's on our task order to see if, in fact, it is warranted as either a type 2 retrofit or potentially type 3 where we would not be able to fund it. The unfortunate part of this process was the elected officials, or maybe the engineers in the room, never knew we were looking at something, and we're not aware of that. So we look back at the current environmental policy, which is on our website. If you want to have some time to take a look at it, that is being redone, with the whole internet being redone on our pages. But with that said, those policies that are up there say that the local community has to designate and get petitions from the affected residents before we will start a study. What this does is it keeps everybody on the same page. We aren't coming to you, the elected officials in that area, or maybe the engineers in the area, saying we did a study that you know nothing about, or actually getting the ball or the cart way ahead of the horse. So the process you have in front of you is what a letter that we are going to send to the external customer once they call us. And believe it or not, even though we are a relatively aging community around here with all the interstates built, we do get a lot of calls on this from people wanting us to look for those wells for their area. So with that, we'll send this letter back. Also, copy the local agency sponsor for where that is, if it's the county engineer or the local official or the townships or the city officials, just to let them know that this inquiry came in there. If they would like us to do it, or if you would like us, we'll look into it and we'll go from there. So this will create any type of miscommunication going forward, hopefully eliminate any miscommunication going forward. And again, keep us on the same page, because it is a substantial amount, not many of you know, to do this whole noise wall study, to go out there again to do a study, and then find out at the end, yeah, it's warranted, but we can't pay for it. It really isn't a service to the public and to the person who's calling it. So with that being said, Steve Revelo will be sending these letters out. Gladly volunteered to have his number at the bottom of the letter. So if you have any questions about it, or if you do not come next week, or if you are here next Thursday, you can ask Steve for more details on it. But you will notice, too, there's some appendix A's, and M's, some of the appendixes are a little bit off, but that's part of the redo to the whole website for the environmental, for our amazing mitigation policies. So, again, hopefully this will clear up anything we have. We do have a few grandfathered in that we're looking for, and we have sent letters out to those local agencies just to let them know, hey, we're looking at this to get them on board, but we did not stop those in the stream. We will finish what we said we would do for the people we are calling and on this table. So, any questions? Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Amy. I appreciate it.
Next is the nominating committee. The nominating committee did, consisting of myself, David Gasper, and Bob Finney, went over who to recommend for possible chair and vice chair. We went through a number of names. I then called the representatives that were suggested, and they both agreed to be nominated. So the nominating committee, I'd like to do it in one motion. Is that okay, or mm-hmm. Do we do two? The nominated committee came up with Mr. John True of the City of Aurora for chairperson. He's vice chair this year. And Joseph Stefan from Barberton for the vice chair. Again, I was able to contact both these gentlemen. They both basically accepted the nomination. And I would like a motion to approve their nomination.
I'll make a motion.
And do I have a second?
I'll second.
Yield to Joe Paradise. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Congratulations. And our final item on the agenda today is the approval of the 2017 AMAC meeting calendar. It's at the very back of your packet. First paper.
Yeah, so we just, it's very similar to this year. We try to avoid the big conference dates like OTAC, et cetera. So if you do see anything that, you know of that we've somehow missed, I would point to, again, in October, we have our annual meeting, which would be on Friday the 6th. But other than that, it's very similar to last year's calendar.
Any comments? Okay, then I will entertain a motion to approve the calendar.
I'll make a motion.
Do I have a second?
Any point, second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. This is our final meeting for the year, and I need a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Well, and before we do, just wanted to say thanks to thanks to Amy for serving this year. She's done an excellent job, and we really appreciate your service on TAC and policy committees. So thank you very much.
Okay, motion to adjourn, or does everybody just, we didn't have any cake.
There's beer in back there.
Tony has a motion. Do I have a second?
So a second.
Okay, seconds. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
So adjourned.
Thank you.